Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
On May 3rd, 2013, 23-year-old Amber Babilia never showed up for work. She was always on time, so her coworkers immediately knew something was wrong. They texted and called her, but received no reply. Around the same time Amber's coworkers tried to reach her, two separate 911 calls came in. The first was from a caller who reported an abandoned vehicle. The second call came from a group of kids who said they had seen a body near that same car. When detectives arrived at the scene, they found Amber dead. She had suffered severe trauma to her head, and at first, it was assumed that she had been shot. But the autopsy told a different story. She had been brutally beaten, and her arms showed signs that she had fought back. Now, more than a decade later, the person who did this to Amber still hasn't been caught. But her family and friends continue to fight for answers. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Lavasser. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. All right, so tonight's case is an interesting one. Amber was found deceased, brutally beaten. And when I go over the crime scene and the conditions on that day, and also the conditions of Amber, you would think that with the advancements in DNA technology and also the surrounding crime scene and what may have been there at the time when this incident occurred, that we would already know who's responsible for this, especially when you think about it, that this was in 2013, not 1913. And with the evolution that we've had over the last 12 years, if evidence was preserved correctly, you could easily go back to a lab now, and the hope would be that you would find something that would link back to the person responsible. And yet, here I am covering this case, not because of the great police work that was done, but because we don't know what happened. And Amber's family is looking for answers. In fact, it's important to note that family advocate Angie Baker worked with the researchers on this episode to make sure that we covered all the facts. And I always appreciate that, because the number one thing that we need to accomplish here is to make sure that we're telling the story correctly. My goal is for someone out there to come forward with information that can help solve these cases. And it makes it more difficult to do that if I have the information in the case wrong. So regardless of what you think about my opinion, as I'm telling you about the story itself, I want to make sure that everything is the way it needs to be and that you're leaving this episode at minimum with a good understanding of what happened to this victim and where we currently stand. And as far as where we stand, I go back and forth on this one. Sometimes I read it and I think this is someone she personally knew. And then other times I look at it and I think it's someone she might have been familiar with, but didn't have a personal connection with. So I'm really looking forward to getting your feedback on this one, because if we were able to kind of dilute this down to who we should be looking at here as far as an overall profile on the potential offender, it may narrow down the suspect pool for law enforcement and allow them to have a more focused approach as they go forward. But there's a lot to cover. There's definitely facts of this case that are questionable to me as far as how the crime scene was preserved and how it was processed. There's also a video that's over an hour long. I'm going to play a short clip from it because I think it's important for you to see it if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're watching on audio, just, you know, pause the video for a second, go over and search the clip and it'll pop right up. It's public information. So with that out of the way, we do have a lot to cover. So let's dive into this week's case. Amber Marie Berbilia was born on July 16th, 1989, to her parents Peter Berbilia and Michelle Robinson in Poughkeepsie, New York. She was one of three children until her parents split, and then she gained two stepbrothers. Always a social butterfly, Amber had many friends and rarely met a stranger. She finished high school in upstate New York before moving to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to attend school at Horry Georgetown Technical College in 2008. Amber was passionate about art and fashion, a passion that would take her to study in Europe 2 years into her education. And while studying abroad in London, she met Jose Saldir, and eventually the two fell in love. 2 years into the relationship, the two became engaged, and according to WMBF, Amber called her mother Michelle's house and left an upbeat voicemail with the news, telling her, quote, "I'm fine and I'm coming home soon, but I just wanted to tell you that I'm getting married. I'm engaged. I just wanted to call you and tell you." Amber did return home from Europe, and the next several months were a whirl of excitement and planning. She was set to graduate in early May and get married in June, both events she would never attend. On Friday, May 3rd, 2013, Amber planned to run a variety of errands before reporting to her hostess job at the Greg Norman Australian Grill, located at the popular tourist attraction at Barefoot Landing. Now, this landing has several restaurants, shops, and shows, and tourist season wasn't quite in full swing yet for the summer, but it would be coming very soon. So at the time, traffic wasn't nearly as heavy as it would be just a few weeks later. Everything Amber needed to do that day would take her approximately 15 to 20 minutes between each destination. The first stop was getting her hair done, and family advocate Angie Baker told us that next, Amber's errands took her to the Tanger Outlets on Kings Road, also known as Highway 17 in Myrtle Beach. Now, it's unclear exactly which stores Amber planned to visit, but Angie said Amber needed to return some clothing and a bathing suit. We only know about one of the stores Amber went to, and that was at 1:45 p.m. She went over to the Ross Dress for Less, and after that, she stopped by Murphy's gas station at 10826 Kings Road, and this was around 2 p.m. Now, Amber could be seen on surveillance camera wearing a patterned shirt, black pants, and a black ballet flat-style shoe. Her purse can be seen on her right shoulder as she approached the counter to buy herself a drink. Now, you can see on the video here as it's playing, there's nothing too crazy about this that stands out to me. It doesn't seem like anybody's following her or she's with anybody, but all I'll say is that may not have been the case the entire day. Now, the last place Amber stopped was at the Time Warner Cable store in the Kroger Shopping Center on Main Street, also known as Ocean Drive, and this was around 2:11 p.m. Amber went there to pay her cable bill, which may sound strange to some of my younger listeners, but believe it or not, before online bill pay became so popular, we actually had to go to the stores and pay our bills in person. I know, crazy concept, but yes, 2013, people were still paying their bills in person. Unfortunately, after this, Amber wouldn't be seen alive again. However, we do know that she sent one last text message to a friend at approximately 2:35 p.m. This text message, I've spent some time trying to figure out what was said, and I haven't been able to find it. It doesn't appear that law enforcement has ever publicly released Amber's text messages. I don't know for certain when that text was sent in relation to where she was, who it was sent to, or what was said in that conversation. And obviously, with what we're trying to do here, I do think that information would be critical, because as we get more into the story and I start to reveal some things that may surprise you, you're going to understand why it would be important to know who she was communicating with on the day of her death. So Amber goes to Time Warner, and then approximately an hour and a half later, two 911 calls come in. Now, the first one is from a passerby who reported an abandoned white Mitsubishi Montero SUV, later determined to be Amber's, in a brushy, wooded area under the Robert Edge Parkway on Old Sanders Road. The second call came in minutes later at 4:12 p.m. and was from a group of kids, possibly teenagers, who said that they had found a body of a young woman next to the abandoned SUV. Officers from the North Myrtle Beach Police Department immediately responded to the area and arrived shortly after receiving the call, and they later released dashcam footage of their arrival, which I'm going to play for you now so you can get a sense of what the area looked like. All right, so the video's up here. You can see this is from the officer's dashcam. He's driving down this road, and I'm going to play a little bit of this. Again, this video is, I think, around 50 minutes, a little over 50 minutes. So you can watch the whole thing if you'd like. I just wanted to have a clip in here so you could see a layout of where Amber's body was found. So you have this road, a lot of woods, a lot of like little paths that lead off of it, which when you're thinking about what we're talking about, this would be a prime area, especially in the middle of the day where you don't want passerbys to see you. So here you're coming up, you can see that overpass right there. You have someone flagging the police officer to come in. They're still on the phone, probably with dispatch or 911. And then you're already seeing the layout of this area. It's extremely muddy and there's a lot of dirt. You can see a lot of tracks, even from this low resolution video. And as we're coming in here again, wooded, kind of around a curve, so you wouldn't necessarily see it from the street. And here you have, again, a lot of puddles, a lot of mud, multiple cars, multiple people. And that can pose some problems, right? This is a crime scene right here. There's Amber's car. You can see it right there. And if you look at the video, you can see that the car is still running. It doesn't appear to be stuck, but it is still running. And I want to point something out as we're watching this video. Right here in this video, Amber's vehicle door, her driver's side door, is shut. But I will tell you, I did find certain news reports that stated that when officers arrived, or maybe when callers arrived, the driver's side door was open. And Amber wasn't too far from this vehicle at that point. But yet, when I'm looking at this video, and it doesn't appear to be altered, it looks like when the officer arrived, that door is already shut, maybe by one of the witnesses, or it was never open. And maybe the news got it wrong. Maybe they reported on this, and this article was before the footage came out. So keep that in mind. I would think, based on how Amber was found, and we're going to talk about that, that the door would have been open. Maybe she was running from the vehicle, but yet here we are. This is evidence right in front of us, and the door is closed. So there's her car. You can see it. You can see the layout. Again, muddy, a lot of woods. Doesn't appear to be anybody around. And when I first look at this, I'm thinking tire tracks. I'm thinking footprints. All of these things I would want to secure. If I was an officer, I'd be yelling at everyone to get out of the crime scene. I'd be immediately taping off the area because I wouldn't want anybody stepping through there, because that's more prints that we would have to cancel out during our investigation. So there's the footage, and feel free to continue watching. You see some officer interactions. You do hear certain things. There was a part of the clip as I was watching this, because I did watch the full thing, where I thought I could hear officers saying that when they arrived, they heard a faint heartbeat or one heartbeat, and her body was still warm. So I do think that's important to note, that this car was not there a long time. Clearly, the vehicle is still running, and the fact that she was still warm meant that whatever happened didn't happen too long before law enforcement arrived. So there's the video, and again, it's a lot of that. The audio is horrible on it. You do see officers come in and out of frame a few times, but again, it's just a lot of the same. What I think is really critical from the video is not only the officer's arrival and what they initially saw, but also the topography, to understand that this was not on the main road. This was clearly off that path. And why would Amber go down that road on her own? Why would she go to this dirt path where it's more for trails and hiking when she's got to be at work soon? So understanding the layout, understanding that it was a little off in the distance where it wouldn't necessarily be seen from the street, I think that's important. I also think it's important that she was found by these young kids or teenagers on four-wheelers, because when I get into how Amber was found and the layout of the crime scene, it does suggest to me that potentially these kids walked up on something that was still occurring and the offender had to flee in that moment before finishing whatever they were starting. So we're going to get into that. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, we're back. So let's dive right back into when officers arrive. They immediately see Amber's white Mitsubishi Montero SUV, which was still running and also appeared to be stuck in this muddy terrain. But as I said before the break, from my angle, I don't know what you guys think. It looks like it's still, if it wanted to, it could drive out of there. It doesn't seem like the tires are buried. It seems like they're kind of in like this path where other cars have traveled down there, other SUVs have traveled. And I think that if someone was still operating that motor vehicle, they would have no problem moving it. So I didn't see it as stuck. I just seen it as stopped. Now, as far as inside Amber's vehicle, I looked around for not only photos, but any reports from officers that indicated their first observations when they arrived and what they saw when they looked inside. And I couldn't find anything. I was looking to see if they observed any signs of a struggle or any blood inside the vehicle. Nothing. Couldn't find it. If you find something, please put it in the comments below, because that would be extremely helpful. The only thing that I could find was that officers observed both Amber's purse and cash inside the vehicle, and they were both untouched. So when we think about potential motives and robbery being one of them, you wouldn't expect to find her purse and cash inside the car if that's what the offender went there for. Just feet away from the car, officers found Amber's body. Her arm was outstretched and her phone was just inches away from her reaching fingers, and audible sounds could be heard coming from the phone, noting text messages and emails that were still coming through while she lay there lifeless in the mud. According to reports from Crime Watch Daily, blood surrounded Amber's head, creating such a gruesome and grisly scene that detectives initially believed Amber had been shot in the head. And that's why I just brought up a couple minutes ago that I was really looking for information to see if there was blood also inside the vehicle. For the obvious reasons, right? That would be important to determine when she sustained this injury to the head, and it could give us some indication as to where the assault initially occurred. Now, again, they haven't reported that there was no blood inside the vehicle, but they also haven't reported that there was. It seems like they're keeping that stuff in-house still, but that would explain a lot to us, because there's a possibility that this isn't the primary crime scene and that there's a secondary crime scene also in play here that we haven't found yet. And that could indicate where this whole thing initially started. But if we're going to take it at face value, at least for this episode, the fact that they didn't note blood inside the vehicle, we're just going to work off the assumption that all the blood was from outside the car, which would indicate that she was assaulted after exiting the vehicle. How she exited that vehicle, why she exited that vehicle, I have a few opinions, a few theories, but we'll save that for the perspective. And one more thing before I move on, just from an investigatory perspective, because as a detective, and I consider you guys part-time detectives too, as we cover cases going forward, there's an important message here, which is not to assume, not to get tunnel vision. This is a perfect example where initially you see it and you think gunshot, but that's not the case. And if you're initially investigating the crime scene, thinking the victim has been shot, you may not be looking for other things that could be in play. Everyone's looking for a gun potentially, right? Well, what if it was a rock or a boulder that was the murder weapon? But you're not looking for it, so now you're blinded by that. So go into the investigation. Don't extrapolate anything from it. Just look at the evidence for what it is, take it as a breadcrumb, and follow it as far as you can. But yes, in this particular case, detectives initially thought that this was a gunshot wound, and then after the autopsy, it was revealed that Amber hadn't been shot at all. She had been beaten to death. Her skull had been fractured in two places, and some item or weapon was used to strike her in the head at least one time, probably multiple times. Now, the murder weapon was never located at the scene, and Amber's mother, Michelle, later told the media outlets that a boulder or a rock could have been used to kill her daughter, but that detail has never been confirmed by law enforcement. So as we sit here right now, like I said, if you went into that knowing it was blunt force trauma, well, you're clearly going to be looking for something that could have caused that injury, not a gun. And yet, if detectives all at the scene automatically assumed, yeah, she's been shot, let's look for a gun, and they didn't find one, they may say, well, yeah, no, the murder weapon's not here, when in reality, they could be stepping over it. So just an important detail to keep in mind, not only for this case, but other cases that we cover in the future. So knowing that Amber had been beaten instead of shot, it made much more sense for the overall case, especially with what else we learned about Amber's body. Michelle eventually told Crime Watch Daily that during the funeral home visit, they instructed her to pick out long sleeves for Amber's burial to hide all the bruises and scrapes on her arms. And when you take that into consideration, to me, it looks like Amber put up quite a fight, because if she had been shot, more than likely she would have been running from the vehicle and shot from behind as she was running away, and therefore there probably wouldn't be a lot of defensive wounds. But that's not the case here. She clearly was in a situation where she felt like she could do something to get away, and when you take into totality everything that we have here, the fact that she was only feet away from the car, the fact that her phone was only inches from her fingers, and now this whole thing where she's got bruises and scrapes on her arms, it seems like she may have put up a fight inside the vehicle with her offender, and as she was escaping, the suspect chased her down and caught her a few feet from the vehicle. That's at least what it looks like to me. Pause this episode real quick. Based on what you have heard so far up to this point, again, you have the blunt force injuries to the head, you have the phone just out of the reach of her hand, you have these scrapes and bruises on her arm. It looks like she may have exited from the driver's side, although I will say she could have been in the passenger seat and then maybe ran around the car. I don't know why she would do that, which would be towards the offender if they were driving. But again, you have to analyze all scenarios, all theories. Let me know what you think. To me, more than likely she was driving, but I want to hear your thoughts. And just a quick note about the crime scene, because I think it's important to talk about preservation of evidence, processing the crime scene, chain of custody, who would have entered the crime scene and had access to everything that was there and present and could have been seized at the time. In addition to the North Myrtle Police Department, there was also members of the Horry County Police Department as well. But according to Detective Jonathan Martin, he told WMBF that, quote, when we arrived, we set the perimeter, so nothing was moved before the crime scene team came in and took photos and videos. So just wanted to point that out, that this was a large operation. There were multiple investigators from different agencies, and they did do their best to kind of protect the perimeter to make sure there was no contamination of the crime scene. But if you've seen the video, you already know that that's a little bit of an issue at this point, because you have multiple witnesses who have been in there. You have officers who have been in there. You have detectives who have been in the crime scene. And with a muddy crime scene like this, you have boot prints and tire tracks everywhere. So it's going to make an already difficult scene to process that much harder. And I'm sure some of you are saying at this point, well, if officers got there so quickly that Amber was still warm, then that could potentially mean that the offender, the attacker, is still in the area. And even if you don't have good tracks to follow, you may have canines who could pick up a scent. And you're right. Officers did bring in canines and they tried to track down the killer scent, but almost as quickly as the trail was picked up, it ended. And that could be for a variety of reasons. It could be the conditions, the elements outside. It could be numerous scents from all the different individuals that are in the area. It could also be just the skill level of the dogs. We just don't know. I'd have to look at their records. But there's a multitude of variables that play into this equation. And for one reason or another, the dogs weren't able to track anyone who could potentially be involved in Amber's death. However, I'm all about playing devil's advocate, especially when we're trying to find answers. So just for the sake of this investigation, what we're doing here, let's say that the dogs were proficient and they had a good scent and it was the killer. Well, why would it just stop? What could be the reason behind that? I'm sure most of you have came to this conclusion. They may have gotten into a vehicle. They may have gotten into a vehicle, and then that would mean someone else was driving. And if someone else was driving, that means we're not looking for one person, we're looking for at least two people. So it's an interesting variable to consider. Based on what I have here, I would think you would have some type of tracks that officers would have found. It doesn't appear to be the case, or at least not anything they've released publicly, but it is something to consider. At this point, we don't have anything to rule it out, and that's what I'm trying to do here, explore all options. So if you're to believe that the dogs were good, this could indicate how the offender got out of there without being caught. Now, in addition to the canine searching the area, detectives also collected all the evidence they could from the wooded area, and Detective Martin later told WMBF, quote, "We took DNA samples from around the area, from around the victim. We also looked around her car and inside of it." You can extrapolate whatever you want from that quote. What I'm hoping it means that in addition to taking DNA samples from the victim and around the victim, they also took swabs from inside the car, because whether the offender was driving or in the passenger seat, they might have left trace evidence behind. So I hope that car was MVAC'd and swabbed, because especially with the advancements in science and technology today, that could be critical to solving this case. And if they didn't do it, it's a huge misstep.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, it has never been specified what kind of DNA was collected or exactly where it was taken from, but it was sent off to a lab with no results ever being reported publicly. So what does that tell us? Well, it didn't lead to an arrest. We can come up with that much. Does it mean it was completely just a miss? Not necessarily. They could have found something, but maybe not enough to link it to someone. Maybe they were able to determine certain characteristics about their offender, but not enough to pinpoint anybody. I would also say this, that if they had something, science and technology, 12 years, it's come a long way. If they haven't retested it again, that may be something they want to do. Now, as far as the actual investigation, detectives gleaned what they could from the crime scene and immediately began to look into Amber's life and those in it. The first person to get a strong look was, understandably, her fiancé, Jose. The two were set to be married in Spain on June 16th, just 6 weeks after Amber's murder. But it didn't take long to rule Jose out because he was an ocean away in Europe, so obviously he did not commit this crime. Next, detectives looked into Amber's family, but she had no apparent problems with them, and according to Crime Watch Daily, the night before she was killed, she left her mom a loving voicemail saying, quote, "Hey mom, I just wanted to call and tell you I love you. Roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so are you. I love you. Good night." Crime Watch Daily also reported that the murder seemed random. A local reporter told the show that detectives were adamant that Amber, quote, "wasn't someone involved in criminal activity. She wasn't doing anything illegal. She had a bright future ahead of her." With those close to Amber not rising to suspicion, detectives wanted to trace Amber's whereabouts prior to her murder. So they obtained footage from the busy streets of Myrtle Beach, and the first sign of Amber's car came during her early errands at 1:16 p.m., where she was caught on the Club Wyndham security camera located at 410 South Ocean Boulevard in North Myrtle Beach just after her haircut. From there, Amber went to Ross, the gas station, and then the cable company, and her vehicle was last seen at 2:15 p.m. by a camera at a golf car rental place on Oak Street and Main Street, which is still in North Myrtle Beach, and this is where the trail runs cold until the 911 calls after 4 p.m. Law enforcement has never released any other footage of Amber or her car aside from the dashcam video from the scene and the security footage at Murphy's gas station. But according to Amber's sister Amanda, at some point on the surveillance footage, detectives could see a, quote, "dark figure in the passenger side of her vehicle." Now, I did a little digging into this, nothing confirmed, but it appears that the surveillance footage was from a Highway 17 traffic camera. And this would align with what we've been talking about so far with the crime scene itself. Whoever this person was, they were in the passenger seat of her vehicle, and at some point, whether it was initially or during the drive, Amber did not feel safe and knew she had to get out of there. And so upon pulling down this road, maybe she realized at that point this wasn't going to end well, and that's when she made her move, which would align with the door being open still and her only being feet away from the car. Because if she got into a small fight with the offender and then made her escape, that person could have got around from the passenger side and caught up to her, which would also explain her injuries, right? If this wasn't premeditated, at least this part, the offender would have had to have grabbed something close by, which more than likely would have been a rock. And the way that she was killed would suggest that this wasn't the way it was supposed to go down. It wasn't intended, which also ties back to what I had alluded to earlier, where her body was still warm when she was found. So potentially what you have here is a deviation from what the offender thought was going to happen, because Amber refused to be a victim. And during the assault outside the car, maybe originally the offender just wanted to get her back inside, but they're assaulting her. It becomes violent, and then they start to hear the forerunners or the kids that are coming, and they have to get out of there faster than they had planned. So when you start to piece all the pieces of the puzzle together, it does start to paint a picture. Are we right about it? Is it accurate? We may never know, but based on what we do have, if you go through just piece by piece of that story that I just laid out based on what we do have, it does align. Now, there's one more thing we need to talk about regarding this timeline, because it's critical to this case and it could give us some insight to who we should be looking at. Angie Baker, the family advocate, told us that Amber's neighbors had heard her in her apartment, which is located on the 3700 block of Golf Colony Lane in Little River, after her errands, but before her body was discovered. The drive from where she was last seen to her apartment would have taken about 15 minutes, meaning she could have been there as early as 2:30 p.m. According to the neighbor, whose story has never wavered, they heard arguing around 3:15 p.m. with Amber asking the person, quote, "What are you doing here?" Now, the neighbor's statement left Amber's family and detectives wondering, did Amber go home between her errands and work? Because for some time, people thought that whatever happened to her, whoever she encountered, it was during her time running her errands, and someone may have just saw her alone and decided to capitalize on that. But now, with this information, we may be looking at a scenario where she completed all her errands, and then upon arriving back at her apartment, that's when she encountered her offender. The big question is, who was this person? And I will say this, just from me sitting behind this desk, it does track for me. If she's out running a couple errands, especially getting her hair done and doing a couple small things, she may have said, hey, I'm going to go out. I'm going to take care of what I have to take care of. And then I'm going to go back home and change into my work attire. That to me would make sense. That's something that I would do, especially after just getting a haircut. So let me know what you guys think, especially the women out there. Is this something that you would do as well? I know me, after getting a haircut, I want to go home and kind of freshen up because I normally will have hair all over my t-shirt or whatever. So that to me makes more sense than something happening while she's walking around, because that person would have had to enter her car and basically the public. But if she's back at home and this person gets the drop on her, now they can escort her out of the apartment, giving the impression to people around them that this is what they want to be doing, that they're a couple or they're friends or whatever. How this offender would accomplish that, that's a whole different can of worms. Did they have a weapon? Were they able to coerce her to do what they wanted her to do because of that? Or was this someone who initially presented themselves as a friendly? Maybe this is someone Amber knew. And then for reasons unknown to us, something changed during the ride. And you may be saying, well, that couldn't be true, Derek, because they, according to the neighbor, they were already fighting inside the apartment. But how many times have you been in an argument with someone where it's back and forth, it's up and down, where you're arguing at one moment, things cool down, and then you're arguing an hour later? So if it's someone she knew, they could have initially argued and then decided to go for a drive. And when things escalated again, that's where we ended up where we are now. And just to note, before I get too far into this episode and I forget to mention this, the distance between Amber's apartment and where her body was found, it would only take about 5 minutes to drive there. So both scenarios are still in play with that, where things could have cooled down and then they could have escalated again. But based on how short of a duration that is, I'd be inclined to lean towards the theory that whatever happened in the apartment continued over into the car. Amber more than likely did not get into that car and drive under her own free will. And as soon as the offender made her pull off the side of the road, she knew she had to get out of there. That's from where I'm sitting. To me, that's the most likely scenario. So the investigation into Amber's murder continued with no significant leads. And 4 years after her murder, Detective Martin told WMBF that he still had confidence in the case, saying, quote, "It's one of those cases that is close to my heart. I worked on this one a long time. This is one of those cases that she really did nothing to put herself in a spot where what happened to her. She wasn't involved in criminal activity. She wasn't doing anything illegal. She was just being a college kid, and during a normal day, she was killed. A normal day that still haunts Amber's family, but it doesn't stop them from fighting. In February of 2025, they launched the change.org petition to try and pass the Cold Case DNA Justice Act. The hope for the petition is to enact a mandate for the use of genetic genealogy in cold cases if the case remains unsolved for 5 years. The act would also help secure federal funding for testing. And I don't think it's going to be a surprise to you guys. I am all for this. This is what we do with Criminal Coffee all the time. We see situations on a daily basis where cases from 10, 20 years ago, DNA is collected and the technology at the time does not result in any positive results. But that same DNA, if preserved correctly, can help identify murderers right now. And so if in 5 years you haven't solved the case, if there's anything there, I do think we have to open it up to genealogists. We do it at Break Investigative Group, my firm, all the time. I have two genealogists that work with me, Ryan and Jeremy. Shout out to them. We have made some big steps in cases by using investigative genetic genealogy. We're working on a case right now for Criminal Coffee where initially the results were minimal, and yet we have made amazing strides, and I'm hoping we have an update on that case soon. So yes, at minimum, I think this mandate should happen, and I think that yes, without a doubt, if there's any type of DNA evidence in a case after 5 years, which is more than enough time in my opinion, we should be using genetic genealogy to our advantage. This is a tool that we have in our toolbox, just like any construction job out there. If there's a tool for the job that can help make you more efficient and more effective, you use it. And that's what we should be doing here. And yes, federal funding would be great, but there's a lot of private entities out there other than Criminal Coffee that are more than willing to donate to these causes to try to bring these families justice. Now, the last update I have for you in this case is from May 3rd, 2025, which was just a couple weeks ago. And on that day, Amber's family and friends held their yearly vigil for Amber underneath the overpass on Old Sanders Road. The family wrote on Facebook, quote, "This year we will not only honor Amber, but also light candles for other victims of homicide whose names have been submitted by their families. It will be a powerful reminder that we are not alone and that every life matters. Let's continue fighting for answers, for truth, and for justice together." For Amber's family, it's a fight that has continued for the past 12 years, and one that will not stop until Amber's killer is in handcuffs. All right, let's dive into the perspective, and I'm not going to focus too much on my analysis of the crime scene because I kind of sprinkled that in throughout the episode. It was impossible not to, and I even started to go down the path of certain theories, but we're going to elaborate on that more specifically. I want to really dive into that because I do believe, as I'm sitting here right now, that Amber encountered her killer at her apartment, which opens up a couple questions. Was this someone she knew? Did this person arrive there knowing that Amber was going to be home? Which is why, to me, her text messages become so critical. Although I will acknowledge, if the neighbor is right and she said, "What are you doing here?" this was unexpected. Now, what are you doing here? You can go a couple different ways with that. What are you doing here? As in, I don't know you. Why are you in my apartment? What are you doing here? Because we're not on good terms right now and I don't want to be around you. What are you doing here? Because we're friends, but I didn't expect to see you. Now, the fact that the neighbor described this as an argument, I would think that it's more than likely one of the first two. Although if it was someone that Amber didn't know, I would expect that there would be more screaming, more signs of an altercation, maybe a struggle, something where there would be banging inside the apartment because at that point, Amber is fighting for her life. But there was none of that, according to the neighbor. So to me, I fall right in the middle where this is someone that Amber knew. I don't know how well, but she knew this person and she wasn't expecting them and maybe didn't want to see them. That would align with the arguing, right? Like she was having difficulties with someone. And at that point, she wasn't expecting to have a conversation with them. And the fact that they were arguing back and forth tells me that it was something she was at least receptive to, right? This wasn't a complete stranger that she had never met before. Now, there's a spectrum there, right? How well did she know this person? Was this a longtime friend or family member? Was this a former partner? Or was this another resident that she had maybe had some encounters with, and yet she really didn't have a relationship with them at this particular point, although they didn't get that message or they weren't going to accept it? There's a lot of different theories you can go with here, and they're all plausible with the limited information we have. But I do believe at the core, this person came into her apartment. She may have opened the door. They argued over why this person was there and maybe talked about the original reason why they weren't supposed to be there or why they weren't on good terms. And something happened during that argument. Did this person pull a knife or a gun and say, "Hey, you know what? We're going for a ride and I don't want to hear a word out of you. If you scream or yell, I'm going to kill you." So at that point, reluctantly, Amber gets into her vehicle with this person. And while they're in the passenger seat, they're still holding her at gunpoint or at knife point. And Amber's going along with it. Maybe she's trying to talk them down. And they're having a conversation for a few moments. And then she's instructed to turn down this road after this overpass. And she knows the area. And she knows that where they're going, there's probably not going to be any witnesses. And that's not good for her. So as soon as they get on that road, she decides to, again, like I said earlier, not be a victim and take her fate into her own hands. And she garners up the strength and the courage to say, "You know what? I'm going to make my move." Maybe at that point, she strikes her offender to try to disorient them, gets out of the vehicle as fast as she can. And as she's running away, the suspect is able to get out of their side, run around the vehicle, and they jump on top of her. And that's where the attack occurs. Now, at that point, they may have dropped the knife or the gun or left it in the vehicle. So they have to grab something nearby, and they could have grabbed a rock or they could have had a gun and they might have used the gun to strike her multiple times. But to me at that point, it's a fit of rage and it's emotional and it's personal. And there's something to this that indicates to me at least that this person at least knew Amber. There was some relationship there. How deep that goes, I do not know. But yes, this might have been a random act of violence where it wasn't supposed to go this way. But I don't believe at this point that this person did not know Amber at all. And I keep coming back to the fact that she was in an apartment with this person for a decent amount of time and she never yelled for help. And there was, again, an argument, a back and forth conversation. It might have been heated, but it wasn't something where she was kept quiet and she wasn't allowed to speak. According to the neighbor, and again, this is only one person, this was a back and forth dialogue, which to me indicates a prior relationship. So on that note, where do we go from here? Well, you have to go back and re-interview all of Amber's friends and family, and not just from the perspective of they potentially could be the suspects. We need to dive a little deeper into Amber's history, her past, her current relationships. Who was she talking to? I want to know everyone who was in her life, even if it was only for a couple weeks or even days. There's got to be a friend out there. She had a lot of friends. There's got to be someone out there who may have heard something about someone that she had encountered. Maybe there was a friendship there. Maybe it was a resident at the apartment complex who she had had a couple encounters with. Maybe she felt uncomfortable with them. Maybe they pursued her. Maybe they asked her out on a date and she declined. There's a bunch of reasons. Again, she's getting married to Jose, but Jose's in another country at this point. So it would be easy for someone who lives there to assume that she's a single woman living at the apartment, and maybe they took a shot and it didn't pan out. Or maybe she at least was friendly to them and they took it as her flirting back when in reality, she was just being kind. So it could be as surface level as that, where when I say that this person knew Amber, what I'm saying is this isn't some random person who saw her at the gas station and followed her back to the apartment. If that were the case, I don't think that they would have had an argument in the apartment. I think it would have been more elevated. She would have seen this person and she would have started screaming and yelling. That's not what happened. So whoever this person was, they knew her, and it could be as simple as, hey, what are you doing here? We only talked one or two times in the parking lot or in the common area. You don't have a right to be here. It could have been as simple as that. Or it could be someone where there's a lot deeper of a connection and there's a dynamic there that most people in her life are not aware of, which is why it's difficult to find this person at this point. So yes, we got to go back, re-interview all the friends and family, vet them, make sure that they have alibis, but also dig a little deeper into Amber's everyday activity. People at the restaurant, any customers that may have had an unhealthy fascination with her when she was working, that maybe she was uncomfortable around. You got to go speak to them, regardless of how unlikely it might be. You got to go out there. You got to dot your I's. You got to cross your T's and check them off the list. So that's number one. Go back. If you've already done it before, let a new investigator do it again. Maybe they ask a different question that leads to a different result. I would also go back and look at the crime scene. We have a lot of photos and a lot of video. Analyze the tire tracks. Analyze boot prints, sneaker prints, anything that could indicate who this person is, size of the shoe, type of person that might wear that footwear. Align them with the potential persons of interest that you already have. Do any of them match? And this may have already been done, and even if that's the case, it needs to be done again by a new set of eyes with a fresh perspective. And then finally, and most importantly, all the DNA evidence that was collected from that scene needs to be reanalyzed. If there's enough there to test, we need to send it off to one of the many labs that are out there that have proven that with a very minimal amount of DNA, they can at least find a familial match. And with that familial match, you can enter it into a genealogical database where an investigative genetic genealogist can look at the family tree and start to identify potential relatives of the person in question. Now, once you start to do that, there are only certain people that should have DNA at that scene. It's not a common area. And if they're not someone who's a hiker or someone who rides ATVs and their DNA is found near Amber's body or even more so in her vehicle, they have some explaining to do. And also, we have to think about you guys, the people listening and watching these episodes. There may be someone from that community who knows of someone who's connected to what happened to Amber. Or there may be someone out there right now who has a specific skill or background where they hear the information that I've just relayed and they think of something that nobody else has because of their personal experiences or their professional experiences. We want all hands on deck. We want everyone on this case and all the other ones that we cover until we get justice for this family. That's the ultimate goal here, because the reality is this is a pretty new case, relatively speaking, and the person responsible for this is still walking out there amongst your family members and friends. And who knows if they're going to strike again. So if you're not doing this for Amber, do this for the people you care about. I truly believe, especially in this case, that someone knows something, and I truly hope they come forward soon. So just to recap, 23-year-old Amber Babilia left her apartment on Gulf Colony Lane in Little River, South Carolina, to run errands in the Myrtle Beach area. She first went to get a haircut in North Myrtle Beach before heading to Ross Dress for Less on Kings Road. After returning items, she was then spotted at the Murphy's gas station on Kings Road at approximately 2 p.m. before paying her cable bill roughly 10 minutes later on Main Street, also known as Ocean Drive, in North Myrtle Beach. She was supposed to arrive at her job, Greg Norman's Australian Grill, by 4 p.m., but she never made it. Instead, two 911 calls came in reporting her car abandoned on Old Sanders Road under Robert Edge Parkway. Amber's body was discovered beaten just a few feet away from her car, and her cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head with two skull fractures. There were no signs of robbery. Her phone was just inches away from her fingers, and her purse and cash were still inside her car untouched. If anyone has information, they're asked to call the Horry County Police Department at 843-915-8477. And as always, my final words go out to Amber's friends and family. To think that you guys have been on this journey for over 12 years, and even though you don't have answers for Amber, now you're out there fighting for others, not only by supporting them at the vigils, but also trying to change legislation to make sure that we get answers for not just you, but everyone who's been affected by a heinous act like this. It is truly inspiring for me, and I know for everybody else out there who's listening or watching this right now, and we're here to fight with you until you get those answers for you and everybody else out there who's seeking answers as well. And I will say this, the fact that you have DNA in this case, it's extremely promising, so don't lose hope, because all it takes is one lab to put this to work and come up with the results you need and a genetic genealogist who's motivated to get those answers, and you could be getting that call tomorrow. So don't lose hope, keep fighting, and I hope that one day very soon I have the privilege of sitting right here letting all of you know that we now have the person responsible for Amber's murder in custody, and they're going to be held accountable for their actions. Until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.